Funding for this talk comes from TrialX, connecting patients to clinical trials.
Good evening and welcome to Cure Talks. This is Pia Menon joining you from India on Cure Talks 123rd episode. Today we are discussing immunotherapy advances in multiple myeloma. My co-host for the talk is myeloma advocate and editor of MyelomaSurvival.com, Gary Peterson. Joining Gary on the panel are advocates Yelik Biro, Cynthia Chmielewski, and Matt Goldman. Recent years have seen the emergence of immunotherapy as a leading form of treatment for multiple myeloma. New strategies such as monoclonal antibody therapies, antibody drug conjugates, immunocheckpoint therapy, adoptive cell therapy such as natural killer cells, marrow-infiltrating lymphocytes, dendritic cells, CAR T cell therapies, and cancer vaccines represent the basis for the next generation of myeloma therapies. We are talking to Dr. Saad Usmani of Levine Cancer Institute, Carolina's healthcare system, about the latest advances in immunotherapy for multiple myeloma. Welcome to Cure Talks, Dr. Usmani. It's a pleasure to have you with us again.
Thank you so much, Priya, for inviting me. I think you guys are doing a wonderful job in keeping patients and caregivers abreast of the latest research in the field. And, I truly appreciate all of your efforts.
Thank you so much. Gary Peterson will begin with the discussion. Before that, I would like to remind everybody that if you have a question for our panel or our expert, please send in your questions to priya@trialx.com, or you can post it on Cure Talks website. You may also press 1 on your keypad to let us know, and we can bring you on air to ask them yourself. With that, it's over to Gary. Gary, you're on air.
All right, thank you very much, Priya, for bringing this forum to us for all the patients with multiple myeloma. And thank you, Doctor, for providing us with your time and skill to help educate the myeloma patient community. Dr. Saad Usmani is a clinical associate professor of medicine at the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill School of Medicine. He's a director of plasma cell disorder programs at Levine Cancer Institute, director of clinical research and hematology malignancies at Levine Cancer Institute, Carolina's healthcare system. Dr. Usmani received his medical degree in Lahore, Pakistan, where he also learned how to play cricket. And there's something of a difference of opinion between him and Dr. Asher Chanan Khan at Mayo Clinic as to who is the best at playing cricket. But in any event, he completed his residency at Sinai Grace Hospital, Wayne State University, in Detroit, Michigan, and a fellowship in hematology oncology at the University of Connecticut Health Center in Farmington, Connecticut. Dr. Usmani is I think a member of every possible association and group in myeloma, which includes the International Myeloma Working Group, the Southwest Oncology Group Myeloma Committee, the American Society of Hematology, American Society of Clinical Oncology, the American Society of Bone Marrow Transplantation. He also serves in an ASCO Scientific Committee on Lymphoma and Plasma Cell Disorders, the ASH Committee on Plasma Cell Neoplasia, and the NCI Myeloma Steering Committee. Dr. Usmani is on the editorial board of numerous medical journals. He's co-authored and authored more than 70 peer-reviewed research manuscripts, 90 abstracts at national and international meetings. He has also served as a PI, co-PI, for over 35 clinical trials. Dr. Usmani's clinical and translational research has been focused on plasma cells and specifically high-risk multiple myeloma. And obviously high-risk multiple myeloma, to put it in terms that of the cricket, is a sticky wicket. So, Doctor, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Gary, for having me here.
And I'd like to ask you, just in recent years, immunotherapy has gone from not even being hardly discussed 3-4 years ago to front and center, and it seems to be on everybody's lips now. And can you tell us what immunotherapy is, you know, for the, you know, so that the average, you know, myeloma patient and caregiver would know, and, you know, what it is, what is immunotherapy, and how it differs from the current drugs used in the current standard of care?
Sure, Gary. Immunotherapy is a very broad term, and to understand immunotherapy, you know, I think it would be beneficial to understand what the immune system does in a normal person. The immune system in a normal person is divided into innate or immune system functions that one is born with, and the other piece is the adaptive immune system, where the immune system can adapt to the challenges and organism or individual would face, you know, within their lifespan. You know, there are certain immune cells or white blood cells that have the ability to recognize cells that don't belong to the body, and their function is to go ahead and kill them. So cells like neutrophils, macrophages, natural killer cells, they're primed to identify those cells, and they also include cancer cells. So one of the functions that the innate immune system does or is supposed to do is do those kind of functions on a regular basis. Then we have the adaptive immune system, where we have the B cells and the T cells. These are kind of lymphocyte cells that can adapt to the environmental challenges and insults such as, you know, viruses, bacteria, chemicals, proteins that the body gets exposed to. And they can react by making specific antibodies you know, enabling some of the adaptive immune cells to react to those kind of environmental challenges. So this is very important to understand so that you can have a better sense of what immunotherapy truly means. Immunotherapy in general has been the holy grail for cancer medicine for as long as cancer medicine has been developed. You know, it's been envisioned that it would be a wonderful idea to harness a person's own immune system to take out these cancer cells. What happens with most malignancies, you know, solid as well as liquid tumors, is the immune system either becomes exhausted or inefficient or is silenced by the cancer growth. And what immunotherapy tries to accomplish is to try to reverse that trend, either by making the pre-cancer immune environment viable again, or helping the immune system engage the cancer cell again, or enable these exhausted T cells to regain their function in trying to combat the cancer cells. So I've tried to simplify the concept, and I will actually wait for you to ask me further questions so I can, you know, elaborate a little further and in a little more depth.
Okay, you actually kind of answered my second question, which was going to be, you know, that I understand that part of the issue happens to be that your immune system is no longer able to control the advance of cancer in your body, you know, and you mentioned a number of reasons why that was, but and how you fix a broken system once it can't can no longer, because I guess we're always under attack, right, with cancerous cells, and that the body just historically over time, especially when you're younger and have a very vibrant immune system, that it pretty much takes care of all that. But at some point, it doesn't do it anymore. So how do you fix a broken system?
So if we talk about specific cancers, we'll recognize that the way that the immune system becomes dysfunctional or dysregulated is different. For example, you know, for some solid tumors, there are specific kind of T cells called Treg cells that that are embedded in the tumor and enable the tumor cells to grow, and they inhibit the cancer killing immune cells, whereas in other tumors, that's not the case. Therefore, certain strategies will work for certain cancers and certain strategies will not work for certain cancers. When it comes to myeloma, we recognize that there is a qualitative as well as quantitative decline in the immune system. So it's not simply about functionality, but the number of these specific NK or T cells that are supposed to be engaging the myeloma cancer cells, they are dysfunctional as well as reduced in number. This helps us in identifying the right strategies. You know, there are ways in which you can, quote-unquote, wake up the T cells to function properly, where you see the T cell expansion by, say, you know, checkpoint inhibition. Whereas, you know, there are other strategies like supplementing the immune system, like engineering certain T cells to target cancer cells, such as the CAR T cells. So, you know, the kind of strategy depends on specific disease. I hope that makes sense.
Yes. Well, thank you. There are a number of different approaches, as you said. Can you explain these approaches and what you see as the most promising?
I'm sorry. I believe I inadvertently pushed the mute button started to respond. But you know, there are certain things that you can do. As I mentioned, you know, you can modify the T cells. You know, there are these mechanisms of manufacturing chimeric antigen receptor T cells, where you are reverse engineering the cancer-specific antigen into the patient's T cells and then giving it back to them to combat the cancer. And so that kind of cellular therapy mechanism is essentially supplementing the immune effector cells. Then we have other strategies like vaccines, which are enhancing the priming of these cells and expansion of those T cells against the cancer cells. The CAR T cells and the vaccines are in early phase clinical trials. We're still trying to figure out the best targets, how best to maximize these vaccines or CAR T cells to target the myeloma cells without causing a lot of off-target effects, and how to minimize those kind of toxicities, specifically, you know, in relation to the CAR T cells. There are certain checkpoint inhibitors that we are utilizing, targeting, you know, PD-1 as well as in, you know, PD-L1. They're almost close to 24 of them in clinical trials in the United States right now. And the idea with checkpoint inhibition in myeloma is to reduce the T-cell exhaustion and improve the T-cell function and try to amplify it by combining it with certain other anti-myeloma therapy. So in that realm, we have several different antibodies and companies that are working on those specific drugs. It appears that the checkpoint inhibitors work quite well with the immunomodulatory drug class of thalidomide analogs, and a lot of clinical trials are evaluating the right setting for those kind of combinations. Then we also have, you know, the monoclonal antibodies which help amplify the T cell responses against myeloma cells, and you know, antibodies like daratumumab and elotuzumab would fall under that category, as would isatuximab. And they target specific myeloma surface proteins. For example, elotuzumab is targeting SLAMF7, whereas daratumumab and isatuximab are targeting CD38. We also have several antibodies that are conjugated to specific drugs that can stop the cell cycle and kill the cancer cells. So here the antibody is serving as a delivery mechanism, and that's not truly immunotherapy, but it's utilizing that that surface target to deliver a payload that will kill the cancer cell. The overall schema is, you know, we have a lot of different strategies in myeloma that we are evaluating in clinical trials, but not every strategy will be relevant for specific subsets of patients. Different strategies may be utilized for, say, a patient with high-risk smoldering myeloma. And there will be different strategies that may be utilized for high-risk active myeloma. There might be different strategies utilized in the maintenance setting. I'm just giving these as an example and perhaps as a launching pad for further discussion and questions.
Okay. Well, thank you. Do you see any particular avenue that's the most promising?
For most of these immunotherapies, the clinical trials are fairly early in the game, but the results are very promising. Historically, we used to, you know, we've talked about this in, you know, ad nauseum essentially, that when patients start developing refractoriness to proteasome inhibitors as well as immunomodulatory drugs, that the duration of their progression-free survival and overall survival starts to take a significant decline. And we haven't had a lot of headway in that overall survival over the past 5 to 6 years. But those trends appear to be changing. Some of these immunotherapies are providing patients better progression-free survival that they had even when they compare to the progression-free survival patients had with their first-line treatment. And that's quite exciting. And so, you know, these early results are showing us that there is a lot of promise. We've already seen the kind of depth of responses that antibodies like daratumumab are giving early relapse patients in combination with lenalidomide dexamethasone as well as bortezomib dexamethasone. I'm trying to, you know, index the Castor and Pollux trials here specifically, okay. But there are checkpoint inhibitor clinical trials within similar settings that are being conducted right now, where we're hoping to see similar kind of progression-free survival.
Well, that sounds great. Now, the initial results, you know, like you said, have been outstanding, but on some of the CAR T-cell clinical trials, they've had this thing called a cytokine storm, and it's proved somewhat troublesome. Do you see a resolution to that specific problem?
So, you know, I would probably expand on that in a general discussion. So CAR T cells are a very promising strategy. We are still trying to figure out what are the best targets. Is it CD19? Is it BCMA? There are SLAMF7 targeted CAR T cells that are being evaluated in early phase clinical trials. And then once we have that target, what are the best constructs? And how do we keep these CAR T cells alive in a patient? Because after a certain time, they do start dying down. Can we re-challenge patients with these CAR T cells? So even though we have these early responses, are these going to be long-lasting responses? So there are certain challenges that we are dealing with in terms of developing the right product for the right patient. Then the other piece of this is the safety profile. The cytokine release that we see with CAR T cells can be pretty profound, and patients do become very symptomatic. They need to be followed in the ICU very much like a sick allogeneic stem cell transplant patient, although the etiology behind this kind of storm is very different from an allogeneic stem cell transplant patient, but the level of care is similar. We have started to recognize the early signs in patients who may be developing this. And early intervention is something that is essential. There is more rigor in picking the clinical sites that may be able to participate in these kind of clinical trials. And I foresee that the CAR T cell therapy will likely be only given at transplant centers that have high volume and that do a lot of allogeneic stem cell transplants. It is a promising strategy, but we have a lot of work cut out for us.
Okay, well, thank you very much. What I'd like to do now is go on to some of the other panelists' questions. Yalik, are you online? Yalik, your question?
I am here, Gary. Yes.
Okay.
So,
your question?
I do. When you were mentioning Dr. Osmani's credentials, I was saying, okay, when does he sleep? So I'm glad you do everything you do for all of the myeloma patients, you and your colleagues, and we're very grateful for the progress that have been made over the last several years in the treatment of multiple myeloma, Dr. Osmani. We have heard a lot about the effectiveness of daratumumab since it was approved, and as you briefly mentioned, the POLLUX and CASTOR trials, I think, have further solidified how effective daratumumab has been. Daratumumab is not the only approved monoclonal antibody. Can you discuss the use of elotuzumab and when you would consider it for your patients, say, versus Dara? I heard you say CD38 versus LAMF7, but how does it translate to what you do in the clinic for the patient?
No, that's a very good question. For the most part, the advantage with these monoclonal antibodies is the safety profile. As you probably know, elotuzumab has a better profile from an infusion-related reaction and duration of infusion standpoint, but you do compromise on efficacy when it comes to elotuzumab. My general inclination is to utilize elotuzumab in patients who have a slow biochemical relapse and where you do have the luxury of time to see, give a few cycles to see a meaningful response because the pace with which you get a response with that regimen is not as brisk as with, say, a daratumumab-based regimen. So that's the kind of situation where I do utilize elotuzumab. I can share with you that in general, in clinical practice, the wonderful results that we see on clinical trials, doesn't matter if it's a carfilzomib-based combination or a pomalidomide or any of the monoclonal antibodies, the real world experience with these combinations, you will not see numerically the similar depth of response or similar PFS because the clinical trials are picking out very fit patients compared to what we really see, you know, in the real world. And then that is a clinician's challenge. So we try to pick patients based on how they're presenting. We obviously want to utilize, you know, all the therapies the best way possible. You know, if you probably know that BMS is conducting a randomized phase 2 trial of combining elotuzumab with pomalidomide dexamethasone and comparing that to pomalidomide dexamethasone. In fact, this trial just finished accruing. I heard about this last week. What would be interesting is to see if elotuzumab may find a better partner in terms of efficacy when combined with pomalidomide.
Okay. So one of the things you just briefly mentioned is one of the major side effects of Dara is time, right? You spend a lot of time in the clinic, at least for the first few infusions. You presented a phase 1 data during ASH this past year showing the efficacy and safety of the subcutaneous administration of Dara. Can you discuss the results from that phase 1 trial, the positive results, and how the sub-Q is actually administered and what the plan for phase 2 is?
I'd be happy to share the phase 1 data that I had presented at ASH. You know, the concept was to develop a better delivery mechanism for this antibody without compromising efficacy or its safety. In fact, if you could improve safety, that would be a big plus. There is a recombinant hyaluronidase product that can help create a subcutaneous pocket for monoclonal antibodies, and in fact, you know, when combined with rituximab, it's already approved in Europe. So sub-Q preparations of rituximab with that combination are already approved and have been utilized for several years in Europe now. So we conducted a phase 1 study in 41 subjects using a fixed dose of daratumumab. The first cohort was a 1,200 milligram fixed dose based on the usual 70 kilogram average person, and then using the 16 milligram per kilogram formula from the IV formulation. And you know, mixed the recombinant hyaluronidase to a volume of roughly 20 mLs, and it was administered under the skin. In that initial group of patients, we saw some efficacy, no major safety concerns, and of the 8 odd patients, I believe there was one patient who had you know, a grade 3 infusion reaction. When we went ahead with the 1,800 milligram dose, interestingly and surprisingly, the infusion-related reaction was only about roughly 23 or 24-odd percent, and all of them were grade 1 and grade 2. So no grade 3 reactions were seen. And the infusion was given on, you know, roughly around 30 minutes or so. And the response rates that we saw in this cohort of patients was about 38%. This is a very small study, but based on these promising results and the fact that we wanted to have an even more concentrated formulation, which could be premixed and given even in a shorter duration of time, we're just embarking on an expansion cohort on that study where we would be able to cut down the infusion time by more than half. So I'm talking about the subcutaneous infusion. So I'm really looking forward to that particular expansion cohort, and that will help us inform all the upcoming phase 3s. It is very likely that if we see similar kind of efficacy with this formulation, that you will start seeing the sub-Q data come into play in several different settings in large phase 3. So it won't be one study. It might be more than one.
Okay, perfect. So since I am taking the monoclonal antibody questions, what is the next drug in the pipeline that's primed to be approved for the treatment of myeloma? And is it going to behave and work differently than Dara and Dilo?
I think the next one in line is isatuximab, which is another CD38 monoclonal antibody that targets a different epitope or different part of the CD38 surface protein. And there is a pivotal study with isatuximab combined with pomalidomide dexamethasone, comparing it to pomalidomide dexamethasone, that is underway in Europe and the United States. And within the monoclonal antibody realm, that may be the next potential FDA approval. There are other exciting mechanisms of action that may be approved, within the same place that don't belong in the immunotherapy category, such as the BCL2 inhibitor venetoclax or selinexor, which is an exportin 1 inhibitor. But within the monoclonal antibody setting, I think isatuximab will be the next in line. We do have several checkpoint inhibitors that are being combined with other mechanisms of actions. But I think from an approval standpoint, they're probably still a couple of years away from being approved.
Thank you, Gary. That's all the questions I had.
All right. Well, thank you, Yalek. I appreciate it. And we missed your accent last time, so glad you're back. Cindy, your questions?
Yes, I'm here. Hear me well?
All right. Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Okay, great.
Your questions?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Usmani, for taking time to answer our questions tonight. I think I'm going to go back to those checkpoint inhibitors. I hear so much about the PD-1, the BCL-1, and the remarkable results that they're showing in other cancers. We've all seen the Opdivo commercial with a chance to live longer. Can you just explain how a checkpoint inhibitor works and what checkpoint inhibitors are being tried in myeloma? And one last question about the checkpoint inhibitors is I've been hearing some news that there's some late-term side effects that are associated with them. So could you explain what they may be, too?
I'd be happy to elaborate. Most of our checkpoint inhibition or pathway experience originally stems from studies that were done with metastatic renal cell carcinoma as well as metastatic melanoma. So these are solid tumors where we've historically utilized other, immunotherapy ways in trying to combat these cancers. So, the use of checkpoint inhibition is not new. We had ipilimumab clinical trials almost, a decade ago. Then Nivo came into play. BMS has been conducting checkpoint inhibition evaluations in solid tumors. And that's where we started to see the potential impact immunotherapies by way of checkpoint inhibition. It can improve outcomes in several solid tumors. Within myeloma, the checkpoint inhibition clinical trials are still young in the game. We've only had roughly 3 years odd experience in doing some of these studies. So long-term data is still missing in the myeloma patient population. Nevertheless, we do have data being generated with pembrolizumab. There are already phase 1-2 data out there when it's been combined with lenalidomide as well as with pomalidomide and dexamethasone. We have data utilizing nivolumab, or Nivo, as we call it, again, in combination with the immunomodulatory agents. There are other clinical trials with AstraZeneca, and I'm going to probably butcher the name, but it is atezolizumab, which is an anti-PD-L1 inhibitor. Then there are some, anti-PD-1 inhibitor. So there is an impetus to also evaluate anti-PD-L1 strategies within myeloma. And the mechanism of action of these different ways in blocking the checkpoint pathway are quite interesting in myeloma. So PD-1, is the target. PD-L1 is the ligand for PD-1. The expression levels of the ligand, are not as robust on myeloma cells as compared to some of the other tumor subtypes. And there really you're trying to engage the immune system without directly engaging the myeloma cells. So it will be an interesting, experiment to see which strategy works for what subgroup of patients.
Okay, thank you so much. The next thing is, I just recently came back from the AACR meeting, and one of the themes of the conference was basically the marriage of genomics with immunotherapy. And they were talking about how these two strategies are making a lot of progress, especially in some of the other cancers. Can you explain some ways that maybe a patient's molecular profile now is being used to help select treatment in myeloma? And can you put your crystal ball on and tell us maybe what types of advances you see in this area of precision medicine in myeloma and maybe in the next 3 years?
I think you're asking me for a very big crystal ball prediction, but in a very simplified manner, what I can say is we have to start thinking about myeloma in broader buckets by disease biology, because myeloma biologically does not behave in one way. And even from gene expression profiling data and comparing outcomes of uniformly treated patients, we can recognize, 7 or 8 different specific molecular subgroups. Now, when we talk about precision medicine and targeted pathways, we are talking about what's going on inside the cancer cell. When we start thinking about immunotherapeutic strategies, we are thinking less about what's going on inside the cell, more about what's going on around that cancer cell and how we can help engage the immune system, where, the pathways with which, these cells are surviving, they do play a role. But they may perhaps not play a big role for certain subtypes of myeloma and may play a role in other subtypes of myeloma. A very good example, daratumumab is not your classic immunotherapy drug, but one of the ways in which the cancer cells can evade daratumumab is by dialing down the expression of CD38. And when you don't have the CD38 protein on the malignant cells, daratumumab will stop working. One way in which you can utilize molecular profiling is by identifying mechanisms by which certain subgroups of myeloma patients may be able to dial down expression of certain surface markers, and how do we dial them back up? So, I think what we are going to start to see over the next, I wouldn't say 3 years, I would probably put maybe 5 to 7 years on this, is how do we start subdividing myeloma molecular subgroups and approaching myeloma therapy by using drugs from the targeted therapy bucket, and then, you know, a second group of therapies from the immunotherapy bucket, and combining them for best use for each of those subgroups of patients.
Okay. So we're moving in that direction of dividing myeloma, I guess, into more and more groups and trying to treat each of those groups based on their subtypes. That sounds good. My next question is about, we hear that myeloma is very complex. No two myelomas are alike. Most myeloma patients, when they present with multiple mutations. And not only that, but over time, their cancers continue to evolve and, you know, get more mutations along the way. Would there be a use of a combination immunotherapy approach to be able to maybe help out with some of these evolutions in the myeloma? Maybe like using checkpoint inhibitors that would release the brakes on the immune system and combine that once the brakes are off the immune system, then maybe put a vaccine or a monoclonal antibody to work to have it fight your cancer. I'm just kind of thinking maybe into the future. What are your ideas on that?
Those kind of strategies are being examined right now in clinical trials. Several of us are working on combining checkpoint inhibitors with other monoclonal antibodies or immunomodulatory drugs. There are vaccine-specific study. There is a vaccine-specific study that's being done in Johns Hopkins. My center is going to be starting a pembrolizumab with daratumumab combination phase 2 study in relapsed myeloma, and another one combining daratumumab, pembrolizumab, and pomalidomide another subset of relapsed refractory myeloma patients. But one of the key things that we have to do as we do these studies is be very tedious about the translational endpoints, you know, the kind of research you do to on those samples on the patients who are on these studies, in trying to understand what is really happening to the immune system profile of these patients who are responding versus those who are not. Because then you can start teasing out strategies that work best for subsets of patients versus, something that doesn't work for them. My long-winded answer to your question is, yes, these are, these strategies are being evaluated in clinical trials. And I just mentioned what's happening at my center, but, there are a lot of checkpoint inhibitor plus other mechanism of action clinical trials that are being planned, both by drug companies as well as investigator-initiated studies in trying to examine these research questions.
Okay, thank you so much. Gary, there was my question, so maybe you could go on to Matt.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it, Cindy. Matt Goldman, are you online?
Yes, I am, Gary.
Matt, I got to say, I'm pretty impressed with you climbing mountains for myeloma. And
well,
you guys, as a group, collected $260,000, so pretty amazing.
Yeah, we raised a lot of money, which most of it should go to research, so we're all pretty happy about that. Doctor, thanks for your time.
Thank you. If I may ask, was this the Mount Kilimanjaro climb that you did with the MMRF?
With the MMRF, yeah.
Yes.
We got back about a month and a half ago.
Oh, that's wonderful. So I will be doing the Everest base camp next year for the same purpose.
Oh, with the MMRF? Fantastic. There's a couple of people that are going that, one who had done, I'm on a tangent now, but one who had done Kilimanjaro last year is going to the Everest Base Camp this year, and then one patient is also, another patient's going next year as well. My first question is, and you mentioned earlier that sort of strategies for maintenance, what does maintenance look like with immunotherapy?
That is a very loaded question. So it depends on the kind of post induction plus minus transplant response and immune reconstitution a patient may have had. You know, that is in the newly diagnosed setting, and then the concept of maintenance. And what it's trying to achieve in a relapsed patient or a relapsed refractory patient may be different. But, you know, the main idea, for the most part, once, you know, one of the key things that you see in, you know, even before you had these, the fancier drugs, that there were a certain subsets of myeloma patients who, after they got, you know, conventional chemotherapy induction and transplants, had a very robust improvement in their non-involved immunoglobulins as well as their CD4 counts. And it was those patients who actually went into a sustained remission compared to those patients who did not have good immune recovery. One of the things that we have examined in our program, and you know, my immunology colleague David Ferreau presented this as an oral presentation at ASH, we started to look at the immune profiling of patients who are getting to those deep responses, and we started to see a certain subset of T cells called gamma delta T cells that get, you know, strongly overexpressed in those patients who have a deeper response than those that don't. Simply talking about, you know, that post-induction plus minus transplant patient who is not able to get a robust immune recovery with expansion of cytotoxic T cells that may be helping in containing the myeloma or keeping it at bay, we may have to develop strategies where we are augmenting that response by helping the immune system out. So, you know, this is a very, you know, high-level, superficial kind of way of looking at this, but I think we can look at the immune profiling of specific patients and see which patients will benefit from what kind of immunotherapeutic strategies. But again, you know, I'm simply talking about ideas that are under investigation and are not ready for prime time.
Is part of that reason just because these drugs are pretty new and we haven't really had a lot of, been able to watch a lot of trends with them?
That is true. And one of the areas that we really haven't talked about a lot is that smoldering myeloma space, where I think there might be a bigger role for some of the checkpoint inhibitors potentially, because within the smoldering myeloma patient population, there are many patients who have not developed the T-cell dysfunction or energy. And, you know, if you are able to identify patients where the checkpoint inhibitors can enhance the T-cell function, perhaps those patients may never come out of the smoldering phase and may actually regress and never develop active disease. So these are the kind of questions that the myeloma research world is looking at, and it would be interesting to see if we can start figuring out which patient populations are going to benefit from what kind of immunotherapeutic strategies.
Mm-hmm. And follow-up to that, is there talk or research into making immunotherapy a first-line treatment? It seems like I haven't heard that talked about too much.
Again, that will be the eventual goal once we identify, if these strategies are worth taking to the front line. If they are showing efficacy, in that early relapse setting. But there are a lot of immunotherapy strategies that are being looked at in the newly diagnosed setting. We have to figure out which strategy would be best. It's quite possible that we might, if we can figure out the right CAR T cell target construct and all the nuances that I have discussed earlier in the call, I can even envision there being a subset of patients getting CAR T cell therapy instead of autologous stem cell transplants, and having studies comparing those two strategies to see if you can really get rid of the disease long term by that intervention alone. There are a lot of ideas that we have in our minds, but to get to that point, we do need to do more rigorous work on the front end.
Okay. And then lastly for me, and you might have, I mean, you mentioned this already, but maybe you can talk about it a little bit more, is you said that DARE is not really a classic immunotherapy. What does that mean?
All right. I'm glad you asked me that question. So daratumumab, immunotherapy classically is defined as, either you're trying to supplement the immune effector cells or you're trying to enhance, T-cell priming. So either you're playing around with the T-cells and helping them engage the cancer cells, or you're utilizing vaccines to enhance the T-cell priming, or you're, using strategies that will help avoid T-cell exhaustion or amplify T-cell responses. Or you're pushing certain type of T-cell responses or NK cell activation in a certain way. Daratumumab does is, it utilizes the antibody-dependent cellular cytotoxicity mechanism by engaging CD38. In many ways, people think that it would work. When I say people, what I mean is immunologists would say that it kind of works like a drug. What we have seen, however, with daratumumab, is because CD38 is expressed on a lot of different blood types, we do actually see patients who have good responses develop expansion of cytotoxic clonal CD8 positive cells that are essentially trying to kill the myeloma cells. So in some ways, it is acting like an immunotherapy drug. And the other mechanisms like ADCC or the complement-dependent cytotoxicity mechanisms or direct apoptosis mechanisms, those kind of mechanisms do play a role, but there might be a more to the story than simply those mechanisms, as we're discovering.
I see. And then just to add on to that, the question about progression-free survival, are we still trying to see, does DARA have a different rate versus the other immunotherapy drugs, or it's too soon to say?
I think we are going to have some updated data that will be presented at ASCO and EHA. To my knowledge, at the last update, the median PFS for the Pollux experimental arm with daratumumab Lendex, the median PFS had not been reached. So we might have an update either at ASCO, EHA, or ASH later this year. But it certainly appears, even with the available data, it appears to be better than the alemtuzumab data.
Okay.
I'm trying to, what I don't want people to hear me say is that ELO bad, data good. Each of those antibodies have their place, and we pick out the patient populations. But you had asked me a question about, the comparison, and that's the only comparator in a similar patient population.
Okay, understand. That's all I have. Again, thanks for
your time. Well, thank you so much, Matt. Appreciate your questions and climbing a mountain with a that starts out with kill a man.
Well, you'll have a great time next, Doctor. You'll have a great time next year. It's a great experience.
All right. So, Priya, are there any callers? I know we've got a number of questions.
Yeah, we have. Actually, we've been getting questions posted on our website, and we have Jack online right now. I think he wants to ask a question. Jack, you're on air.
Thank you. And my voice isn't too good, but it's been good hearing you, Dr. Usmani. I had just one question. Every so often I hear about ADCs or antibody drug conjugates. Can you explain how those differ from monoclonal antibodies?
Sure. I think I touched upon this, but I'll be happy to elaborate.
Sorry,
No. Don't worry about that. So the antibody drug conjugate essentially utilizes the monoclonal antibody piece of the concept. So you have a specific protein that's expressed on the surface of the cancer cell, and you tag on a payload or a specific drug onto that antibody. So the antibody latches onto the cancer cell surface. The cancer cell ingests that product, and as it's broken down, the drug payload is released, and that drug kills the cancer cell. So that's the drug conjugate part. So you are conjugating or hooking up the drug or payload to the antibody.
So I've read that, and I understand that it's then the payload that kills the myeloma cell. At least I think that's it. It does. Monoclonal antibody like daratumumab doesn't have a payload. So what does it do to kill the myeloma cell?
So it does that by two kind of mechanisms. So one are what we call immune-mediated mechanisms, where the antibody dependent cellular cytotoxicity happens. So there are certain cell types, such as natural killer cells, that will be engaged when they see the daratumumab antibody latching onto the malignant myeloma cells and go and try to kill them. Then there are complement-dependent cytotoxicity. So it's complements are specific proteases that help kill cells that don't belong to the body. And the way that the complements are activated is by way of certain antibodies that the body is supposed to be making. So our immune system makes antibodies, say, against a certain virus or bacteria, and complements may help in killing those specific cells by helping lyse them. And I'm trying to simplify the explanation. Then, the two, once daratumumab, say, two adjacent receptors with CD38 are occupied by daratumumab, there can be cross-linking of those antibodies that can lead to cellular apoptosis. So the cancer cell can die by that mechanism. Hmm. Then there is another host of immunomodulating ways. So there are immune-mediated and then immunomodulation. So CD38 is expressed on other immune cells, and there may be inhibitory T cells that are telling the good T cells or the cancer attacking T cells or not to do their job, and you're dialing down the activity of those inhibitory cells and allowing the expansion of CD8 positive cytotoxic T cells that are specifically killing malignant plasma cells. So there are different ways in which daratumumab appears to work.
Thanks so much. Always good talking with you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. Dr. Usmani, I know we are almost completing our time, but I'll just pick up two questions from the audience who have just posted on a website. You can just maybe give a brief answer and we can wrap up. We've been talking about daratumumab a lot today, and I think another question is, are you seeing new or unexpected side effects during the use of daratumumab, like extramedullary relapses and symptomatic hypoglobulinemia requiring IVIG?
I have not seen those effects so far with some of my long-term patients who have been on daratumumab. I have folks who are, more than 3 or more than 4 years out on daratumumab as well. And we haven't seen an increase in the incidence of infections or immune dysregulation in those patients requiring IVIG. But again, we don't have long-term follow-up. I think we are going to start seeing more detailed analyses from Pollux and Castor coming out in the next 1 or 2 years, and I think those will probably be good data sets to look at for some of these long-term side effects.
Thank you, Doctor. The next question is, for CPIs, are you seeing any benefit in using PD-1 versus PD-L1?
So far, I haven't seen any differences. But again, we are talking about small cohorts of patients who are on these clinical trials, and or some of us can get off-label approval from insurances for use based on the available data. It's still early to say whether one strategy is going to be superior to the other. I think we'll start, as we start seeing more and more of these data, probably towards the end of the year at ASH, and probably next year at ASH will be when we'll start seeing more mature data. Some of these nuances will iron themselves out.
Thank you, Doctor. I think that was a very, very information-packed hour, and I'm sure the panel agree and all the audience too. There's a lot of things that you've shared with us today. Thank you so much for your time. Gary, Yelik, Cindy, Matt, and Jack, thank you so much for your support, participation, and the questions. And this talk is available on CureTalks website, and we'll be loading a transcript for the same. Please visit curetalks.com for details of our upcoming talks. Thank you, everyone. Have a nice evening.
Thank you, Priya. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.